Welcome everyone to the Future Melbourne Committee meeting here at the City of Melbourne on Tuesday the 19th of February 2019. I declare the meeting open at 5:30 p.m. I welcome councillors, management and members of the public in attendance. Welcome all of you to the City of Melbourne. We respectfully acknowledge that we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and a significant meeting place. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and a location for events of a social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that this meeting is being streamed live. It's streamed live to the City of Melbourne's website. An audio and video recording will also be published on the Council's website by close of business tomorrow. Whilst we do try to avoid filming members of the public through this live streaming, sometimes inadvertently an image is captured, and we're putting you on notice now that that may happen. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should you have any queries relating to the conduct of this meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak to a member of our council business team at the end of this meeting. I request at this stage that all mobile phones be turned to silent for the duration of the meeting. The agenda tonight comprises two reports from management and three items of general business. One apology has been received from Councillor Cathy Oak. I advise members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than six members voting in favour of it, the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. Now this evening, a request has been received by The Age and News Corp to take photographs during the meeting. I'm asking a councillor to move a motion that the Future Melbourne Committee resolves to allow photographs to be taken of the Future Melbourne Committee meeting in accordance with the request made by the media outlets. Councillor Wood, Deputy Lord Mayor, and Councillor Susan Riley seconding the motion. Are there any speakers to the motion? Would the seconder like to speak to the motion? Are there any other speakers to the motion? I'm then going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand. That is Councillor Leppett, Councillor Riley, Councillor Rees, Councillor Wood, Councillor Capp, Councillor Francis Gilley, Councillor Watts, Councillor Lelou, Councillor Louis in favour. All those against? Councillor Pinder. The majority in favour, the motion is declared carried. Thank you. If any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered by the committee, councillors, please disclose the type and nature of your interest prior to the consideration of that item this evening. We now come to confirmation of minutes of previous meeting. I call on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of open meeting number 49 held on Tuesday, 5 February 2019, moved by Deputy Lord Mayor, seconded by Councillor Rees. I'm now going to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. That is unanimous, so I declare the motion carried. Thank you. I ask councillors at this stage, are there any matters arising from those minutes that you would like to discuss? No, thank you very much. The following submissions have been received in accordance with the council's meeting procedures code. In relation to agenda item 6.1, which is the Domain Parklands Master Plan 2019 to 2039, we've had requests to speak from Chris Thrum and Paul McSweeney. We've had items of correspondence also from Chris Thrum and Paul McSweeney. In relation to agenda item 7.2, which is the post-travel report by Councillor Cathy Oakes' 6th Global Biodiversity Summit of local and subnational governments, Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, we've had an item of correspondence from Chris Thrum. In relation to agenda item 7.3, which is the post-travel report by Councillor Jackie Watts, Yangon, Myanmar, November 2018, we've had a request to speak from Christopher Lamb on behalf of the Australia Myanmar Institute. We've also had items of correspondence from Christopher Lamb and Chris Thrum. I advise submitters that when we get to those items, you will be invited to address the committee. You will have 3 minutes to address the committee, and it is the intention of the committee to adhere to the 3 minute time limit. And to assist you, we have this counter on the wall, and it does a countdown and beeps sound at the completion of 2 minutes to let you know that you have 1 minute remaining, and then it beeps again at the end of that 1 minute when you will have concluded your address. Very good point, Tony Penner. Were there any people that wanted to speak tonight to an item but didn't? I didn't read their name. Domain Parklands. Tony Penner. Thank you, Tony. And that 3 minutes applies to you, Tony. Thank you. Another beep sounds to show that the allocated time has been finished. Due to the public interest in the matter of the investigation into allegations against Robert Doyle, tonight I'm first going to ask our Chief Executive Officer, Justin Hannay, to address the committee in order to put some facts on the record, and then we will open public question time. Justin Hannay.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. The benefit of the finalisation of the Supreme Court proceeding and the discharge of the injunction is that Dr. Freckledon QC can now complete his investigation and provide his report. That would not have been possible if the City of Melbourne had lost the case, or if the City of Melbourne won, however Mr. Doyle appealed. I acknowledge and empathise with Ms. Carla Williams, who's upset and frustrated by the slow progress of the relevant legal processes. But the City of Melbourne has done what it can to clear the way for Dr. Freckledon QC to complete his investigation and his report as soon as possible. Dr. Freckledon has been instructed by our lawyers, Minta Ellison, to complete the investigation and to report as soon as possible on his findings. This report will be completed once Dr. Freckledon has concluded his interviews, and our lawyers are in the process of setting up these interviews. Mr. Doyle has withdrawn his Supreme Court action and injunction under a deed of settlement. The terms of the deed are confidential, but we did ensure in this instance that we were able to speak publicly of the essential terms of the deed. What's very important here for me to say is that nothing of significance is being withheld, and most importantly, the City of Melbourne is not prevented by the settlement from disclosing Dr. Freckledon QC's report or findings after his investigation is completed and after the police investigation and any resulting proceedings is concluded. As part of the settlement, the City of Melbourne will not be pursuing Mr. Doyle for costs. Each party agreed to bear their own costs of the Supreme Court action, and this is a common legal practice. As someone new to the city and looking at the investigation with fresh eyes, I believe that the settlement we've achieved is appropriate. It removes the risk of Dr. Freckledon QC not being able to complete his investigation and report, and it means that the City of Melbourne is at liberty to release the report or its findings as it considers appropriate once the police investigation and any resulting proceedings are concluded. Thank you, Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you, CEO. Well, this is the time of the meeting where we have 15 minutes for public questions. I'm just going to run through how it works. In accordance with the Council's Meeting Procedures Code, a 15-minute period is provided at the beginning and the end of each of our meetings for members of the public to be able to ask questions. Questions should not be longer than 90 seconds. I remind members of the public this is not a time to make submissions. It is a time to ask questions. Submitters will be invited to speak when the relevant item in the agenda comes up. So I'm now going to invite questions from members of the public. And what we'd like to do is if you can put your hand up, we'll take names and then one by one we'll ask each person to come up to the microphone and state their question, but at least we then have an understanding of the people who would like to speak. Okay, thank you. I'm going to, given that we've just had the statement of facts on the record, I'm going to start with Carla. And I note that we have 15 minutes at the end of the meeting as well, but we're going to start there just so that we can be consistent with where we're at. So, Carla, could you please come to the microphone? It is turned on already for you. And just for the record, state your name again and then your question. Thank you very much.
Sure. My name is Carla Williams. I'm the third complainant at the centre of the second Freckleton investigation. As a victim of sexual assault by Robert Doyle, who was effectively an employee of your organisation at the time of the offence, I believe I have the right to have the following questions answered. On radio this morning, CEO Justin Hannay shared that a deed of settlement was reached, and just now, and bound by a confidentiality agreement. I would like to understand, is there any reference in this agreement that could be perceived to be in favour of Robert Doyle? As the victim and centre of this investigation, Mr. Hannay, please expand on how not being privy to this deed and the confidentiality benefits me personally. Following the City of Melbourne receiving communication from Kaniel Gates advising of Mr. Doyle's intentions to seek an injunction preventing the release of the second report, I was asked to meet the former CEO, Ben Rimmer, and the City of Melbourne's legal representative, Minter Ellison, lawyer Cassandra Collier, on the 26th of November 2018 at 4:30 p.m. at Minter Ellison's office. In the presence of lawyer Cassandra Collier, Ben Rimmer provided a police name and contact number, and suggested this was now the only likely avenue for an outcome. I formalised my police statement on the 9th of February 2019. Across the 11 weeks from meeting with Mr. Rimmer and formalising my statement, I was in regular contact with Cassandra Collier, City of Melbourne's lawyer. Why did your lawyer not inform me that formalising a police statement could potentially further delay the Freckleton report? Why was I only advised via the City of Melbourne's media statement on Friday night? Have you confirmed with Victoria Police an investigation is in fact underway? Following 13 months of waiting, please explain why waiting another potential 12 months plus benefits me, the victim of assault of your former employee and former Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Carla. Was there a lot more?
I would like to finish. As per Justin Hannay's comments made yesterday held in a private meeting with Sally Capp, please confirm again it is Ian Freckleton's advice to defer release of the report post-conclusion of Victoria Police investigation. Please stop making representations suggesting Council's decisions are in my best interests without consulting me first. I first met with Minter Ellison on the 16th of January 2018. On the 21st of January, I signed my statement. During this initial meeting, Minter Ellison failed to preface the following. my statement would be subject of an investigation where the City of Melbourne has no powers to compel Robert Dore to respond should he choose not to. These limitations are outlined in law and I deemed pertinent information for me to provide informed consent. Minter Ellison and the City of Melbourne failed to share that by participating in an investigation, the full report would never be disclosed to me, only a summary of findings. I only found out this yesterday. Minter Ellison and City of Melbourne failed to preface that I'm simply a witness and the client is City of Melbourne. Minter Ellison and City of Melbourne failed to prepare a document of above disclosures and have me acknowledge this. Ask your solicitor whether any of this is in writing and that I acknowledge this with my signature. As the victim of sexual assault by your employee, I do not agree with the City of Melbourne's position. I have a right to the full report into Freckleton's investigation. The City of Melbourne has no right to take my statement and create rules along the way to best suit your own needs as the City of Melbourne. I trusted in your organisation and I have been grossly let down in so many ways. I seek closure. And Mr. Haney, I seek to move on with my life just as much as you want to get on with your job. I hope this flawed process shall be a platform for your organisation and others to readdress the I am too sick to respond stance that Robert Doyle has taken. In the week my identity has been known, majority of comments from people are, do you now regret coming forward, contrary to Sally Capp's offering that I'm brave? My answer to that question right now is I wish that Minter Ellison, as one of Australia's leading prominent law firms, together with City of Melbourne, a public organisation, cause lawyers, because I'll add cause lawyers and Melbourne Health, had given me the option of informed consent before I participated in both of these investigations. Both organisations, in my mind, failed in this and therefore I participated ill-advised. I expect the report to be released and I believe the City of Melbourne should extend an apology to me for its failings and this flawed process. Unless you can tell me otherwise.
Carla, thank you very much. There are a number of questions and statements and requests in that presentation. And I'm going to ask Justin to do his best to respond to as many of the points as we can. It's been recorded, so to the extent that we need to do follow-up, that's certainly something that we will do. Thank you very much for coming and presenting and asking those questions this evening. I'm going to ask Justin to respond. If you would like to, you're free to sit down again. If you'd like to stay there, then that's perfectly fine as well. Justin, thank you.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Look, I'll just some of the questions we need to take on notice, and we'll work through them as we get the transcripts to provide answers to each of those questions. Some were statements, and again, I want to acknowledge that the process has not been great for you. The process has taken a long period of time. And I would say to you, Ms. Williams, that some of this is out of the control of the city. Now, I'll go back. We did not take out the injunction order. We were undertaking an investigation. When the injunction order was put in place, and I go through to the two outcomes that could be possible in relation to the injunction, one was that we proceed to court on Monday and Tuesday. We wait for a ruling in terms of the outcome that could take 2, 3, 4 months. If there was an appeal, that appeal could take a further 10, 11, 12 months. So it may be that we're in a position where some 12 months, 18 months later, we're still not in a position that we can investigate. We acknowledge and accept there are flaws in the Local Government Act. To that end, the city has written, the former CEO Ben Rimmer wrote to the Minister for Local Government. The Lord Mayor has also written to the Minister for Local Government. We've moved a motion successfully at the MAV conference, the Municipal Association of Victoria conference, seeking more powers for the inspector. So I go back to we didn't seek the injunction order. what we thought was going to occur was that Dr. Ian Freckleton QC would be able to carry out his investigation and conclude it. Now, he hasn't been able to do that because of the injunction order. That injunction order is not there and he now can conclude it. So I accept, Mr. Williams, you do not see it as in your best interest, but it was one way that we believed, certainly I believed, and in bringing that advice to council, that we could resolve the matter. One of your questions was what advantages or what is it? Is there anything in favour of the for Mr. Doyle in the settlement? Look, one is that if we proceeded to court and he lost, then we would be then we would have been seeking costs. I guess the other side to that argument is that if we'd gone to court and we'd been successful, and he had been successful and we had lost, he would have sought costs. The costs aren't the main issue here. The main issue is bringing the investigation to a close for us to be able to investigate so that you can see an outcome. Now, you know, I know that in your eyes, an outcome that took 2 or 3 or 4 months, you're sitting here more than 12 months on waiting for an investigation that should be concluded, should be brought to a close. I want to clarify the third one, which is a copy of the report. Under the deed that we have signed, I made the statement earlier that nothing of significance is being withheld. What's important there is what's not being withheld is our ability to provide that report. What we've got to be careful of and what we've got to take advice on is if anyone comes forward as part of Dr. Ian Freckleton's investigation, and it's an independent investigation, it is at arm's length to council. If someone comes forward and has a confidential disclosure as part of that, the question is when we receive that report, can that be released? Now, if I go back to the previous investigation, the findings were released, the report wasn't, because that was the case. Now, if in this instance that's not the case, then the advice that I would be giving to councillors is you should be given a copy of that report and the findings should be published, but we won't know until the report is complete. One of the questions, I think, was around timing, and I'll clarify timing. Timing is Dr. Freckleton has requested, as I understand it, through our solicitors to carry out some final interviews. We have tried to have those interviews completed as soon as possible. Now, hopefully that's a matter of days. It might be a matter of weeks. We've got to find those people. We have to approach those people to ensure that they are available to be interviewed and they've got to agree to be interviewed. Once he does, and I think there's been some confusion here, Dr. Freckleton will probably take 2 or 3 days to finalise his report. So can he conclude the report now? That's a decision for him. It's an independent investigation. Does he need to interview further people? That's a decision for him. It's an independent investigation. Now, my understanding is, in terms of the advice I've been given by Minters, Minter Ellison, is that that they need to go and see if these people are prepared to be interviewed. Now, if Dr. Freckleton doesn't need to interview those people, then he can conclude his report. The other important factor here, I think, is that Robert Doyle will be asked by Dr. Freckleton to participate in the investigation. He will be asked to participate in the investigation. Just let me check in terms of further questions that were asked. One of your questions was, why were you not advised by Minter Ellison that going to Vic Pol could delay? I need to take that question on notice. I don't know. I know that that's your view of what's occurred. I don't have an answer to that. I would need to ask. I would need to seek advice from Minter Ellison to see whether or not they agree with that or not, to provide you with a response. But it's one of those questions.
Sorry, just to repeat it. following the investigation, the criminal investigation, to conclude. So why is it that you're speaking to clarity when you make that statement?
No, the point that Justin was going to was about where the informed consent point that you made earlier. And seeking advice from mentors about those statements. I think that we've had a fulsome as we can in the time and in this environment, response to a lot of the questions. As we said, we will certainly be looking at the detail in the transcript and very happy to keep coming back to you, Carla, with as much information and feedback as we can. And certainly the focus is on ways in which the City of Melbourne can conclude this report to achieve an outcome as soon as possible in relation to the independent investigation by Dr. Freckleton. One other point I'd like to pick up is your statement that we shouldn't speak on your behalf in relation to it being in your best interests. And I really take that point on board. We'll be very careful about the language that we use, and we need to keep saying we are doing what we can to bring a conclusion to that report, which we believe is something that you also want, but certainly for you to be able to speak to that. We will keep moving to seek a conclusion to the process and an outcome for you. As soon as practically possible. We do have a number of other people who would like to ask questions, and I'm going to ask the indulgence of my councillors to actually hear those questions now before we continue with the rest of the agenda, noting that the points you probably want to make aren't related to the agenda either. So I'm going to ask people to come up in the order in which they gave their names. So Ian, Shelley, and then Louisa, and Chris will come to you after that, if that's okay. Thanks to those who have been here. Thank you, Carla. Thanks, Mark. All right. Ian, your question in 90 seconds, please.
Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors, over the recent years there's been a tenfold increase in flights over Melbourne's inner suburbs. Hundreds of small planes and helicopters invade our area without having to get any air traffic control permission. We have previously talked to council about the health and amenity impacts, but I now bring your attention to the safety and security risks. Since the start of this year, we've seen news reports of light plane and helicopter crashes in Australia, averaging one per week. Given the unregulated dense air traffic over inner Melbourne, we're concerned at the threat of terrorist activity. We build bollards and barriers to protect us at ground level. Someone can hire a light plane and drop dangerous items or crash it into the MCG, Federation Square or Flinders Street Station. In London, UK and Phoenix, USA, local government bodies have brought about changes to flight paths and patterns to address residents' safety and noise concerns. We ask councillors to advocate to the state and federal governments on the need to properly regulate the airspace around Melbourne. And my question is, will you play a leadership role in protecting inner Melbourne from these risks? Thank you.
Ian, thanks so much for your question. This is an item that has been discussed over some time with you and also amongst councillors. We're currently preparing our call to parties. As you know, it's a federal government issue. I think you told me that. And we're preparing our call to parties. It is included in our call to parties, requesting all of the major parties in the federal election to explain to us their approach to addressing these issues. I'm say with confidence with my fellow councillors, is that you have a lot of detail, you have a lot of positions that you are already advocating. As we now go into a time where the federal election is real, why don't we organise a meeting so that we can understand how you're going about your advocacy, how we might be able to support that, and we can explain how we're going about it so that you can give us some feedback on any ideas on that. But the issues that you've raised tonight and that you have raised previously with us sit right there at the top of our engagement with federal government on ways in which we can change it. And we have also mentioned it to state government in terms of any advocacy support they can provide on this issue.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor.
Turn that on, Shelley, to come to the podium. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Shelley Fobel. We're turning to council because we need your help. For years, we have been ignored in trying to get some respite from many problems caused by hundreds of flights over our neighborhood. For the last few years, things have become even worse with flight path changes, which on some days send hundreds of jets in a concentrated path over our homes 4 to 5 minutes before landing. There was never any community consultation about this change. The authorities don't consider the community impact of their actions, and all our efforts to have fallen on deaf ears. They only consider the interest of commercial operators, and there is no mechanism for community to be heard except if you're living directly next to an airport. Even the ombudsman is appointed and paid by air services. Many people think that this situation is so unjust that there is need for an inquiry into air services. You are the level of government close to the community, and therefore we ask you please take up this issue and advocate on our behalf. I thank you.
Thank you, Shelley. And in response to that, yes. The timing is absolutely right. We were just talking about it today, but I'm looking at my fellow councillor, Pinder, and without even speaking to her, we're going to, the two of us, actually take this up within our councillor group and with you to provide some of that leadership and visibility for you. Is that all right, Councillor Pinder? Louisa, thank you.
Thank you, Louisa Savio. I've been asked to speak on behalf of my community. I live in Richmond, alerting you to the severe impact of the large number of light aircrafts and helicopters that are currently allowed to fly without air traffic control over inner Melbourne. I'm a resident of the neighbouring municipality, the City of Yarra, but we are looking to the City of Melbourne as the preeminent council in Melbourne to play an advocacy role on behalf of all the people in the inner Melbourne. City councils in major cities such as London are taking up this issue on behalf of their people, and we desperately ask you to take on a similar leadership role on behalf of the broader inner Melbourne community. We value council's initiative with the Fly Enabling Agreement, but as this is only voluntary, aviation interests can still continue to cause us stress and health issues. We hope that council will play a strong role in representing the interests of inner Melbourne by advocating on behalf of the community at the federal level where action can be taken. I therefore respectfully ask Council, will you please take up this issue on behalf of the broader inner Melbourne community? Thank you.
Louisa, thank you for coming across the border to speak with us tonight. It's good to know that there are common concerns, but also there's a common energy around this issue. I'm meeting with your mayor tomorrow, so that's timely, and we can take this issue up at that level as well. Thank you very much for your question and for coming along tonight. I'm now going to ask Chris Thrum, who had a question. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you, Lord Mayor. My question is in regards to Federation Square. So maybe this question could be answered by Rowan Leppert or Nicholas Rees, who are experts in the planning department. My question is, Federation Square is looking to be written into the Victorian Heritage Register after a submission from Heritage Victoria with support from the City of Melbourne, who voted in support of that. My question is, would you be able to refresh the public's mind on the key issues on why Federation Square should be written into the Victorian Heritage Register?
Chris, thanks for your question. Maybe I should know. Rohan, Councillor Rees, as our Chair of the Portfolio for Planning.
Sorry, Lord Mayor, I was going to suggest that the Chair of Heritage Planning, Councillor
So
Rohan,
you put your microphone on so that you could defer to somebody else. Thank you. Councillor Leppert.
Thank you, Chris, for your question. And you referred to the Future Melbourne Committee meeting last year where we considered the submission made to Heritage Victoria, in fact, to the Heritage Council as well. Part of the citation includes City of Melbourne controlled land, and so the City of Melbourne does have a direct interest in the land, and we've argued very strongly that Federation Square as a whole should be included on the State Heritage Register. It satisfies many of the criterion required for State Heritage Registration, including its unique architecture, but also the social and cultural importance that it plays for the broader Victorian community. We felt, and we resolved this way, that the proposal from the National Trust was excellent, but it could have gone further in terms of cultural heritage, and so we provided the Heritage Council with even more information about the connections of Federation Square to Kulin Nation culture and modern ceremony, which is something that's quite unique for Federation Square. It's a one-of-a-kind building, and I'm delighted that the City of Melbourne's advocating so hard to have it included on the Heritage Register, and I'm sure that you and others will as well. The Heritage Council hearings will be coming up in April, and I think we may even be represented there to continue making the important case. Thank you for the question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. All right. No other questions at this point, and we are well beyond our 15 minutes, so thanks, everybody, for bearing with us. We are now going to move on to reports from management, and it's my pleasure to call on the Deputy Lord Mayor, Aaron Wood, to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to the Environment Portfolio. Thank you.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. There is one report from management for consideration under the Environment Portfolio. That's Agenda Item 6.1, the Domain Parklands Master Plan 2019 to 2039. And I'd call on Deb Cales to make a brief presentation on this item.
Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor, Lord Mayor and Councillors. We are absolutely excited to bring the Domain Parklands Master Plan to Council for endorsement tonight. It is thrilling to get to this stage. With a 20-year vision of valuing the treasured parklands at the heart of Melbourne and celebrating their past, present and future, this master plan really is the result of extensive research, consultation, analysis and collaboration with the land managers. I always love this picture because it really does showcase how beautiful it really is. A reminder of why we need the master plan in the first place. So master plans really help guide future actions. And as you can see with the list of things on this particular slide, the city does face challenges going forward, especially with a 20-year master plan. Three key challenges we face, obviously climate change, our urban heating, and a rapid increase in our population and densification in the city. So it's really important to us to maintain the beauty and the function of the parklands, but also accommodate the growth that we're seeing. This slide, it's a coincidence that it speaks to a honeycomb and the ecology in the park, but it really does show also the interlinks of all the consultation that we did. So in the third phase alone, 4,500 postcards distributed to households, copies of the master plan in three of the libraries, posters in parklands, information on our Participate Melbourne viewed by over 1,700 people, and then individual emails to stakeholders such as Victoria Police, National Trust, rowing clubs, South Bank Residents Group, Melbourne South Yarra Group. What was also lovely with the development of this was the involvement of children. 90 children participated in understanding what their vision was and what their use was. And it was always also promoted through the Shrine of Remembrance and Melbourne Gardens and Victoria Arts Centre. Traditional owners were also met with and deeply engaged in the development of some fundamental principles in the master plan. And then we also accessed council advisory committees, and they include our Parks and Gardens Advisory Committee, Disability Advisory Committee to make sure it was accessible, and Family and Children Advisory Committee as well. The land managers, there are four additional, including us. So Government House, Royal Botanic Gardens, Victoria, Shrine of Remembrance, Victorian Arts Centre Trust, and DALP are also involved. We work closely with them to develop this master plan. It's important to note that each of the land managers have responsibilities for the area that they manage. However, from a many visitors' perspective, it's one area, and so it was really important that we worked with them so that the experience of people was one united parkland that really does all fit together. Also, things like ecology, they know no boundaries. They don't know when they're going over boundaries, so we needed to maintain that as well. So the key fundamental to all the values in the is a principle that there will be no net loss of parklands and that future change should bring positive benefits to the domain parkland. So that first do no harm principle really prevailed. These values that are listed there on the screen form the base for all the decision making. So starting with the essential values helped us navigate all the diverse views and different opinions and really helped us stay true to what we were trying to achieve, especially when it's a 20-year master plan. So cut to the chase, I'm sure you all want to know what the good stuff is that we will see. Going by the themes, nurturing the diverse landscape and parkland ecology was really important. So we obviously want the parklands to stay beautiful. We know how much people value the landscape and character of this beautiful land. Many people have joy from the gardens, and part of the consultation was just hearing all the incredible stories about the gardens. It's one of our premier parklands, and we wanted to lift the horticultural excellence and support that visitor experience. So we're doing things like partnering with Royal Botanical Gardens on an expanded arboretum, as well as increase our native planting, which also gives us an opportunity to talk about the history, and improving the landscape character and planting diversity. We're also, you'll see in part of the land, part of the master plan is investigating alternative water uses. So really make sure, we know we need to keep irrigation, but let's do it in a really clever way. And as you are seeing, even beautiful acknowledgements of our nature in our city through the suggestion of a possible treetop walk, which will not only allow a different view, but also allow access that some people can't get right now. Acknowledging the history and cultural heritage was really important as well. And one of the examples of history is obviously our traditional owners, working closely with them. The plan does explore ways that we can better tell that story of the Aboriginal connection to this place. It reflects Aboriginal people's past, present and future connection to country. And one of the specific actions are the improvement to the King's Domain resting place. This is a commemorative site of remembrance. It holds the remains of 38 Aboriginal people across Victoria, and it was really important that that be improved, and we reflected that. Exceptional visitor experience. Most people experience it through their visitation. And so the plan includes renovation of parks, paths for greater accessibility, more seats, shade along the river for people to sit and watch the activity on the river, like rowing. The plan also includes the need for improved signage and wayfinding. So sometimes things are there, people just don't know about them. So we acknowledge that people need to have a greater ease of getting around. More picnic tables, seats, drink fountains, and even well-designed, delicately placed fitness equipment as well, just to acknowledge the feedback that we're getting about the growing needs of the park. The barbecue area, built in the 1970s, we've maintained it just about as much as we can. It's time for an upgrade and we will do that, especially when you recognise that the barbecues, I mean, that's one of the last remaining places where families can come in and have a meal for free when they can't necessarily do that in the rest of Melbourne. Upgrading to toilets, and that also includes acknowledging things like a changing places toilet to reflect that we have everyone who visits the park. Pedestrian movement and access, as I said, the signage and wayfinding, but also making sure we understand where bicycles and pedestrians and cars aren't necessarily coexisting well right now and redesigning it so they can. The intentions are in the master plan and subject to detailed design with each individual area. That's when we'll go into exactly where the changes will occur. And then acknowledging even in areas where we've suggested that current transport or traffic studies don't really warrant permanent roads available and we're suggesting closure. We won't close it to horse and carriage, for example. They'll still be allowed to access that point. Management and partnerships as well, as I said before, continuing to have land management collaboration meetings. It's not just the development in this master plan. It's actually a way of working that we've built in for the future. So in short, this master plan really is a combination, the combination of all these actions we really do think addresses the challenges that the city faces. We've taken into consideration the very diverse views of all the community and stakeholders that we've engaged with, and we do believe this is the best representation for the future. It also recognises where there might be other projects by state or other areas and other master plans, in fact, that relate to the Domain Parklands. So we've acknowledged them and made sure we're not building something in isolation. The next stages going forward are for us to build a detailed implementation plan, and this recognises that staggering of work is really important. We have got other things happening in the city, so obviously if there were changes to any way that people were navigating with their car, we would look to make sure that was timed with respect to other changes in the city. And also keeping our eye open for any funding models or partnerships that we can use to make sure where there are shared benefits, there are shared funding as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Deb. Before you jump down, we'll just go to questions. Councillor Pinder.
Thanks, Deputy Lord Mayor. Deb, thank you. Very extensive. And I understand there's been comprehensive engagement with the other four land managers. But I'm mindful that each of those land managers has stakeholders that cascade down. How confident are you that they in turn have communicated and provided the right information to these stakeholders?
Thanks, Councillor Pinder. Yeah, that's a good question. We did go directly to them, and we actually personally sat down with their communication and marketing areas as well and asked for feedback with them to make sure that it was cascaded. We saw evidence that it was cascaded. So an example might be Moonlight Cinema, where they were communicated to and brought in, but with respect of the prevailing land managers as well as our individual commentary, and then where requested we'd go along and give presentations as well. So we're very confident.
Just one more question, Deb. You mentioned briefly horses and carriages. Yes. They're obviously a very key recreational and tourism activity in this city. Yeah. How much consideration have you really given to them?
There were some fantastic points that they raised when they were looking at the way they operate now. And certainly when we thought about the access, even if it was no cars using those areas, we recognise it is important for the horse and carriage too, because they can coexist with pedestrianised areas very differently to what cars can. And then also there was some really great feedback about the need for water points to be placed in the right locations, and also to look at where the horse and drawn carriage can actually park, because right now there's a little bit of conflict with bike lanes, so
really taking on board the best pathway for them, the best access for them, the best alignment of an onboarding on an area where someone could park, and also making sure that the water stations were appropriate. So that's all part of the plan.
Thanks, Deb. Councillor Rose.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Deb, there was the three phases of consultation around the master plan. The third of those was in August to October 2018. I'm wondering if you could just tell us what the major changes were that were made to the master plan as a result of the third phase of consultation.
Yeah,
what's
sure.
new in what's before us tonight?
Yeah, thanks, Councillor Rees. Absolutely. And I'll use this as a time to say the feedback was so rich. We actually extended the feedback because people asked us to, and we did so. It was really rich. And the purpose of feedback is truly to understand and sanity check some of the proposals. So an example of that was really great feedback we got from the rowing community. There was, on paper, it looked like it would be easy for a certain slip lane to no longer be there. And when we actually walked through that and went and spoke to the rowing community and went down there for quite some time, we realised that's not functional with the way they operate. So obviously that wasn't executed and that was taken out. Also, we did have feedback about people who acknowledged there is a lot of stuff happening in the city right now. So if we were to close roads, it would have to be in a staggered approach. And so we've reflected that as well.
Councillor Riley.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Very well received, thank you. My question is about the Domain Precinct, mm-hmm. Which is a sector that has already undergone some enormous pain with the metro construction and so forth, and the tram line being cut, which hasn't helped. But will there be any changes to the road network around Domain?
Thank you, Councillor Riley. We're not anticipating any changes to the car parking, so there still is access. We are hoping, actually, that Domain Precinct gets a bit of an uplift from the increased visitation to the park, and I think that would be likely. I have heard that the tram will be reinstated. I don't have facts on that, but that will also be useful. But no, we're not changing any car parking in that area.
Thank you. I just have one other. Will the Shrine be able to keep that existing car park that's sort of like a bit of a wedge behind the Shrine?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's parking on their land and they have the right to dictate who parks on their land.
Thanks, councillors. Any further questions? Councillor Francis Gilley.
Thanks. I have a question in terms of, the increased heat of the city and climate change and adaptation of the park and replanting, is there consideration about how, with such a large area of planting and grass, that we, maintain the kind of park that we've had, or is that possible, or is part of the change to anticipate that change?
Thanks, Councillor. I'll take that as an opportunity to say that this master plan coexists with all the other strategies of council, our nature in the city strategy, as well as our urban forest strategy, and so absolutely, and even our climate adaptation strategy or our climate change mitigation strategy. We have thought this through in recognition of the fact that we do have a changing environment. As I said, one example is appropriate use of water, making sure we do have water in the right place at the right time, and also careful planting that both is good for our ecology but also will be resistant to some of the climate changes that we anticipate.
Any further questions, councillors? If not, thanks, Deb.
Thanks.
So we'll go to our submitters, but first we'll hear from Claire Ferris-Miles, who's going to speak on behalf of two of our land managers in Domain Parklands.
Evening, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors. So two of our key stakeholders really wanted to be here tonight, and they've asked me just to read out a statement on their behalf. The first one is from Tim Enwistle, who is the Chief Executive Office of the Royal Botanic Gardens, and he says, "One of the excellent outcomes of this project has been the development of strong alliances with the other land managers located in the Domain Parklands. We've worked closely with staff and management at the Royal Botanic Gardens, or sometimes known as the Melbourne Gardens, the Shrine of Remembrance, Sydney My Music Bowl, Government House, and of course the City of Melbourne. We are looking forward to continued collaboration to improve visitor information and access, improved coordination in management of use of the parklands, and enabling the landscape as a precinct to provide healthy environmental service functions for the city. I wish to pass on our support for the Master Plan and the initiatives contained within it. It has helped to inform our own Melbourne Gardens Master Plan, which is due for public release and engagement in March. And the second comment I just wanted to read was on behalf of Dean Lee, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the Shrine. And he says, I'd like to take this opportunity to once again express our thanks and appreciation for the professional engagement extended to the Shrine of Remembrance throughout this process.
Excellent. Thanks, Claire. And thanks to Tim and Dean as well, because this is as much about stakeholder management as it is about the parklands. Let's go to the first of our submitters, and I'll call on Tony Penner to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Thanks.
Councillors, Tony Penner, South Bank Residents Association. We'd like to commend Council for this plan. It's a brilliant plan. We were actively engaged with the consultation at various stages. Quite a number of our committee joined one of the many tours that was offered through the parklands, including myself. And it was remarkable to learn the things that we didn't know about the parklands, and, you know, they're right on our doorstep. But, you know, the important thing from a South Bank perspective is this council is acutely aware of how deficient South Bank is from open parks in relation to council's own policy on open space. This parkland is very close to the South Bank village side of South Bank, and we know that the residents of that side of South Bank regularly use the park. So, of course, the work that's being proposed and the upgrades are certainly welcome from that perspective. Particularly, I'll mention some comments here from our committee. One person in particular, that they were walking around there on Australia Day and they closed off the Lithgow Avenue to cars, and they could see the potential to host the street festivals and the community events, which was proposed in the document. So that's something that's exciting that we're looking forward to. In particular, it's interesting to see how we don't question the adequacy of the status quo until our eyes are opened to it through such a master plan. It was a brilliant master plan, and I certainly commend and thank all of the staff who were part of putting that together. And, you know, personally, the personal experiences of walking through the gardens and seeing the issues demonstrated to us was a real, real, real highlight. So, pat on the back, everybody. It was a brilliant plan. My only question or my cynicism, I suppose, after seeing other master plans come to fruition in South Bank City Road is one of them, whether or not the money will be allocated in the future budgets to actually make it happen. We're starting to learn that while there's a timeline there in the plan, it doesn't mean that that's what's going to be stuck to. So we ask that Council seriously look at that timeline, seriously look at the budget, and it's not just a pie in the sky. I can go back to the South Bank Master Plan 2008, and there's still many things in there that haven't even been discussed post that master plan. So let's just not make it a dream. Let's just make it a reality.
Thank you very much, Tony. One of the most positive submissions I've heard in all my years on council from you, so thank you very much. I now call on Chris Thrum to present for 3 minutes.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor Aaron Wood. I'd like to echo the sentiments and statements of the previous three speakers tonight. I'd like to point out that this master plan is phenomenal, and congratulations to the management team and the officers as well for all the great work that they've done. Superb report. This is continuing on the tradition and the great work that Ferdinand Mueller initiated with the first domain master plan back in the 19th century. Now, we know that in the Kulin Nation, this is the land of the Boonwurrung, and for thousands of years, the Boonwurrung managed the land and the water, and they walked the land. So it's important that we do respect the Kulin Nation and the tribe of the Boonwurrung. And Deb did mention that in detail, so it's great work from the City of Melbourne to recognise that as well. We're very thankful for that. I'm glad that Tim Entwistle sent in a message to you guys. It's really tremendous that the Royal Botanic Gardens have a strong working relationship with the other partners in this area. Now, in regards to climate change too, it's important that the City of Melbourne do work with Tim Entwistle and the Royal Botanic Gardens. I went to a talk a while back at Mueller Hall by the groundsman at the Royal Botanic Gardens, and he was pragmatic and practical, no BS. He said the planet's warming up. And so the Royal Botanic Gardens are aware of that, and it's important to, in the future, to look at planting more resilient trees within the domain region, which the report sort of encapsulates as well as being of important. The great thing about the report too is like it's a great example of Participate Melbourne and the importance the City of Melbourne places on community feedback. It's like not working in a vacuum. The City of Melbourne is fully aware of stakeholders and citizens all around the city, and it's important that we continue on that great work. I'd like to also mention that the skate park is an important feature of the domain parklands, and the skateboarders too, like a phenomenal community in the City of Melbourne, very positive, vibrant energy that they bring to the City of Melbourne. So if we could look to continue to improve the amenity of the skate park, that would be phenomenal. So in conclusion, again, congratulations to Deb and the team. Great presentation, great report, and we look forward to continuing on with the Domain Parklands vision in the next 20 years. And in concluding too, the walkway through the trees is a great idea.
Thank you very much, Chris. I always love when you get to talk about the Barron. Our last submitter is Paul McSweeney. Paul, you've got 3 minutes.
Thank you, councillors, and thank you in particular to the officers. Cathy Kiss was very helpful for us in the Melbourne South Yarra Residence Group, and I'm speaking tonight on behalf of Michael Butcher, who's away at the moment. There are just three items that went through to the keeper as far as we're concerned, and we'd like further consideration of them. The first is the road closures. While we recognise that Birdwood Avenue is sort of quarantined for a little while, Linlithgow Avenue and the slip road that joins Linlithgow Avenue to St Kilda Road is in fact currently an escape route to relieve the congestion in Toorak Road West, believe it or not. If that was closed, then our life would be in this particular area would be even more difficult. We put up with just such enormous chaos and congestion, which is only going to get worse as the trucks keep coming through with the spoil. So, believe it or not, these do have an impact further on down the line, not only for that reason, but also for the 605 bus, which is currently suspended while Southbank Boulevard is being completed. But that's was given to local residents really as compensation for losing the Domain Road tram. And it's an important part for a facility for residents, and it also provides public transport right to the door of the Royal Botanic Gardens and Observatory. So we would say, please, that should not be done until such time as the Metro has been finished, at which time you can do a more updated transport plan just to see what's happening with the traffic. The Edmund Herring Oval is another concern that we have. We believe it should definitely not be made synthetic when it's restored, and there should be no sports lighting. We don't believe it's appropriate to intensify that as a sports venue. Finally, the King's Domain South East, in our view, should be retained as a natural parkland and trees. Already one site is recognised as a wonderful tree and parked area within the report, but the last thing we need is increased clutter with fitness equipment, barbecues, picnics, tables, etc. People can already bring their rugs, and if they want barbecues, they can go to Faulkner Park or they can go to the river, but it's essential we retain that parkland.
Thanks very much, Paul. I'm going to ask Deb just to respond to those points around timing of road closures, Edmund Herring Oval intensification, and obviously King's Domain South East with what is currently sort of the treed meadow, if you like.
Happy to. Thanks, TLM. And thank you, Mr. McSweeney. It's always very useful to get the feedback. The first point about the road closures and the timing, absolutely. So I think we were trying to balance the fact that this is a 20-year master plan, so the bulk of the master plan will be in post-metro state, and recognising that a lot of the items in the master plan will be in that different time. But thank you for acknowledging the role and importance of transport and public transport as a form of access as well, and we'll do our best to make sure the implementation plan absolutely recognises the current state congestion with the metro and doesn't add to it. The second point, and thanks for your comments about the preference not for synthetic, same with us. So obviously our starting position is to go natural, and it's always that supply and demand issue that we've got, where currently the supply, the demand needed for that park, for that oval, if it was natural turf, it wouldn't stack up and it might be out of action to get repaired and then no one could use it. So we're looking at that balance of what we think the future needs will be and where we can go natural. Absolutely, we will. And if it needs to be synthetic because of demand, it might be the best way for us to achieve the best outcome for the people who need it. Similarly, with lighting, we do recognise that because of the demand, having access in different times of the day does suit a lot of people who just aren't fortunate enough to be able to access it when it's in sunlight. And the last point of that beautiful area. Again, we totally recognise the importance of that area, and you're right, you know, the trees there are quite beautiful. There's some beautiful, strong trees. So the master plan indicates what we need to fulfil and respond to the demands of the community, but we'll go through detailed design phase. So we'll circle back with you and many others to make sure that although we do serve the functional needs, we absolutely do recognise the aesthetic needs as well.
Thanks, Deb. Just before you step down, just a question from me on the lighting of the oval, if that proceeds. My understanding it is the new directional lighting, which is quite concentrated and doesn't sort of spill out as absolutely the old lighting did, so you don't sort of get that huge halo effect of the old ovals.
That's correct? Right, DLM. Forgive me, I forgot to mention that point. There's been quite good technology advances with lighting and the baffling that you can do with lighting. So we've been able to make sure we're confident that we can provide lighting to the oval that doesn't detract from nature. It also doesn't detract from lighting of the shrine and the prominence of the shrine, and we believe we can reach that happy medium.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Deb. With that, we'll jump into the debate at hand, and I'm happy to move the recommendation on the screen that we approve the Domain Parklands Master Plan, and I call for a seconder. There's a Councillor Reese. Thank you very much. It's a very popular item, this one, as it should be. So firstly, thanks to our submitters. I think some excellent endorsement also, but also, Paul, some really good feedback, food for thought, as we begin to go through the process. And I hope that didn't probably set all of your concerns at ease, but did set some of them at ease. And the written submission as well was excellent. So I think a lot of these issues are around timing and recognising the congestion that's going on there, and also the impact of the Melbourne Metro project. And I know that with such a long planning horizon, it's really good for something as precious as Domain Parklands and things like the Royal Botanical Gardens to be looking at those sort of horizons. But that does sort of then need a really timed implementation plan. So the implementation plan is going to be absolutely critical. I just want to acknowledge Councillor Oak, who sadly couldn't be here tonight. I know she'll be very sad not to be here, because it feels like that this is longer than the birth of an elephant. it has gone through so much consultation and has made it better as a result. I remember the Domain Parklands master plan being on the table when I first came onto council, so it's been around for a very long time. So just acknowledge her leadership throughout that whole time as chair of the environment portfolio twice over now in her three terms. I want to acknowledge the Urban Sustainability Team. They've got a bit of thanks to Deb, to Kath Olive, to Kathy Kiss, who's just was there from the very start, that's for sure, but also to our committees, but in particular our Parks and Gardens Committee, who have, again, considered elements of this master plan for a very, very long time too. So thanks to each of them. To all of our land managers, you've heard that this domain Parklands Master Plan is very much about a whole series of land managers coming together. So to Government House and Grounds, the Melbourne Gardens and Melbourne Observatory, the Shrine of Remembrance, the Sydney Meyer Music Bowl and the Royal Botanic Gardens as well, we thank them for their really collegiate way in which they've approached this. And it doesn't mean we've agreed on every single element, and there's been some really robust conversations, as there should be, with much loved parklands like this, but also to our community members and to our traditional owners. They've played a massive role, and you can still hear the submission process is picking up elements that are making this much, much stronger. The last master plan was 1997, so we're long overdue for a piece of a real jewel in the crown of Melbourne that's seen such intensity of development around it. And, you know, that vision of our forebears to set aside these parklands is something that we absolutely reap to this day. It's 123 hectares. To put that into some sort of context, we're looking at Royal Park, which is our largest park by far. That's 170 hectares. So this is an extremely significant green space that just accepts so many people each year. I'm not going to go through all the elements of the park, of the master plan, because Deb did that so well, and I recognise we've already been going for some time already. But things like the treetop walk, they just capture people's imagination and probably bring a whole lot of new park users to it. It also acknowledges that we'll eventually, and the state government will obviously have to foot the bill for this one, but we'll eventually get a bridge coming out from Birrarung Ma connecting into those domain parklands, which will be absolutely fantastic. I think this has hit the right balance of the congestion that's there now, the recognised need for parking and some through traffic that's still using this as a sort of vital cut through as we see a lot of disruption. But ultimately, as we see our population double in the not-too-distant future, that green open space, that ability for people to walk, to appreciate nature, is just going to become even more important than it is today, if we can imagine that. So I want to say thanks to everyone for a huge amount of work. It's taken a long time, but good things take time. And I can't wait to get on with, obviously, endorsing the plan if it's supported tonight, but getting on to see the implementation plan, which is really where you'll see this vision come to life. But well done. Councillor Rees.
Thank you very much, Deputy Lord Mayor. It's a great honour to be able to second the recommendation up on the screen tonight and speak in favour of it. In my first 2 years on the council, I had, again, the great honour of being the deputy in the environment portfolio with Councillor Cathy Oak, and it was terrific to see the passion that she brought to this master plan exercise, but also the passion of all the officers here at the City of Melbourne, who have really just invested so much time to get us to where we are tonight. And who couldn't but not be moved by that photograph that Deb put up in her presentation from the southeast corner of the domain, looking towards the city at that massive 127 hectare beautiful green parkland that we've got. We have had three review processes or phases, which we love to consult at the City of Melbourne, and we've really gone to town on this one, and rightly so, given the importance of what's involved. And I think the importance of the Domain Parkland is only going to grow going forward. Tony Pennant never lets us forget about the growth in South Bank, and it is the case that South Bank and the CBD is going to grow from 72,000 people to around 160,000 people over the next 18 years. And so this asset for the city is only is going to come under more pressure and is also going to be more important to the city. That's why this master plan is just so important. The Deputy Lord Mayor has touched on some of his favourite aspects of the new master plan, so I will do the same if you don't mind. I think the treetop walk is something which people, I think, is going to capture the imagination of Melbourne, and I cannot wait to take my children on that. I also think the elevation of the Aboriginal history and culture of the area will be something that Melburnians will welcome. For me, I've got to say, my personal favourite is the improved opportunities for Melburnians and visitors to our city to sit and contemplate the Yarra, with the improvement to the barbecue area and sitting area along the Yarra. I often ride and walk through there, and it is truly my favourite corner of the city, looking as you do from the South Bank to the north. And so I think it was long overdue for improvement, and great to see that will go forward. Paul, I think you did raise a couple of really good points, and I think some of them have been picked up through this third phase of consultation, and I trust that you will stay in contact with us, because you know there's a long way to go. This is a 20-year master plan, so we will be working together with the community as we go about delivering it. So I'll finish on that note and say what a wonderful thing this is.
Thanks, Councillor Reese. Councillor Pinder.
Thanks, DLM. Terrific master plan. And I think for me, what jumps out mostly is the collaboration between the five land managers, and it's exciting that is ongoing, it will be ongoing, and what can be achieved throughout the implementation stage. I think also the consultation with Family and Children's Advisory Committee and the Disability Advisory Committee, and as soon as I asked, you were there, so it was terrific. Perhaps a slight editorial change to include the domain precinct, taking on what Councillor Riley said about, you know, that vibrant shopping and hospitality strip, which is so important. And they're going to gain from all of this anyway, as you said, Deb, earlier. As Chair of People's City, I'm always thinking about accessibility and people getting around, you know, around the park as well, and maybe some autonomous vehicles or golf buggies, something like that, could be considered at some stage. And a vision for me is that perhaps a pedestrian link from Rod Laver Arena, which would be amazing. And, you know, it's a wonderful spot for stopping and reflecting as well. And I think there's so many exciting things we can do with maybe reflection benches or, you know, as Councillor Reese said, we have international and interstate visitors there as well. So it's so important to showcase these beautiful parklands. All in all, exciting, enriching and fulsome report. Congratulations, Deb and Kath. Brilliant.
Thanks, Councillor Pinnett. Councillor Leppert. Sorry. Councillor Leppert.
Thank
Councillor
you.
Councillor Riley.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. I think this is so good. Like the Deputy Lord Mayor said, we've waited and waited to have something so exciting that we actually are and have done, and having a really hard look at that significant stretch of parkland that is at the gateway to our city. I'm also pleased about the domain precinct, as Councillor Pinder said, you know, having, you know, spoken to the precinct down there. You know, just the fact that retail strip will have more visitors, which means they're going to have more activity there, and I think that will please the businesses. The dining options and so forth, it would be great. The Shrine car park, it's always been one that I thought, please don't let that go, because I park there and I like it. So I want that to stay for as long as I possibly can. But I think the other part is the apartments, the dwellers on St Kilda Road. What a view to have this magic park at their doorstep, just to be able to enjoy the leisure of having it right there at their front door. And that's for all of Melbourne, not just the apartment living around the area. So thank you to everyone at the team that has produced this amazing Domain Parkland Master Plan. And let's move forward now. Thank you.
Councillor Leppert.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Of course, I agree. It's a remarkable plan. Thank you, Deb. Thank you, Kath. Thank you, Kathy. And thank you for your whole team for all the work you've done. We were going to consider this at the end of last year, but we added on another consultation process, and thank you for facilitating that. that allowed us at the end of last year to consider all of the submissions before the final version was put together. It means that that we are confident that that process has been multi-staged and had and lots of opportunities for people to have their say and to make sure that we're ending up in a position that if not everyone's happy with, at least we've done the best job that we possibly can to balance the different interests that different groups and individuals might have. The interests of those who live in the immediate vicinity in South Yarra are different than those who live on St Kilda Road and those who live in South Bank, but different again to those who visit and those who work there and those who, you know, might have a particular heritage or scientific interest in the botanical gardens or any of the other heritage sites. I'm not necessarily excited about what's new in the plan. Part of a park's master plan, just like the Royal Park master plan, is how we manage existing heritage assets that we know are so special already. Of course, there are utterly significant state and national heritage citations for most of the parts of the domain parklands as a group, and this master plan doesn't seek to undermine those citations in any way, and I think that that's quite important. At the same time, the population of Greater Melbourne is growing at such a massive rate at the moment, including local populations, that I think it's also remarkable that we're seeing no net loss of parkland and that it's not just about the new things, it's about making sure that we're managing the really fast increase in use of the parks and making sure that we're valuing and keeping everything that we already value from these old historic and heritage parklands. And I think that it generally strikes the right balance, and congratulations to everyone involved. It would be remiss of me not to also acknowledge Councillor Oak, who couldn't be here, as you've done, Chair. She is our tree enthusiast and park enthusiast in such an impressive way. She's worked hard on this and she'd be proud of the outcome as well. I just want to note a couple of changes. The mention of Melbourne Observatory wasn't in the first draft and it is there now. The Melbourne Observatory, I had the pleasure of visiting quite recently, actually. It's one of Melbourne's underappreciated national heritage assets. I regret to inform you, officers, that one of the slight tweaks that might need to be made to the document in an editorial change is that the main building for the observatory is missing from all the underlying maps, so we might want to put that in before we hit print. It's quite a significant building. 12-inch telescope house is there, but the main building isn't. It's right smack bang in the middle of domain parklands as a whole, and I think it's quite a significant space, but thank you for giving it more recognition than the earlier drafts. The changes to exercise equipment are important. Obviously, locals in South Yarra are concerned about what that did mean, and I hope that there's confidence based on comments here tonight and the text of the new version of the master plan that there's not a swathe of new equipment about to be installed tomorrow morning. All of these issues require proper consultation and discreet decisions of council to implement, and this document is not a cover for a new agenda for increasing sports patronage in the area. That said, of course, one of the other controversial issues, and I'm not enthusiastic about it, but I'll be very enthusiastic when it comes to council in future, whenever that might be, is the intensification of use of the existing sports fields. Just like in Royal Park and the Flemington Road Oval, where council begrudgingly, I suppose, supported the intensification of use of one of the ovals because the master plan anticipated there being two ovals, but one of them was lost to the Children's Hospital quite a few years ago, and it was thought that intensifying use on the existing ovals was a much better way of managing the massively increasing demands on our sports fields across the municipality than to ever encroach outside where those existing sports fields are. So we'll be making sure that any change to those active uses in all of the domain parklands, if they have to occur, and let's hope that we can find ways that they don't, will be as sensitive as absolutely possible. And that's my undertaking as well. This policy isn't a sports allocation policy, it's a parks master plan, and I think it's quite impressive, and thank you to everyone involved.
Thanks, Councillor Abbott. Lord Mayor.
Good. Well, I'm adding my enthusiasm to the discussion this evening. This park is a major part of the hearts and lungs of Melbourne, set out in the 1850s by Sir Charles Latrobe with incredible vision, and definitely deserving now of this new vision that's been pulled together by our team here at the City of Melbourne with a lot of input from our community and other stakeholders who are leaders in that precinct. And it's not just exciting but absolutely necessary that we now bring that new level of investment and attention to such an important asset in the organism that is Melbourne as it continues to grow. We've noted the balancing of demands, and I think that's what we've seen through a lot of the community feedback and certainly from comments this evening as well. We've got tens of thousands of local residents there. It's very important to them. There are tens of thousands, again, of residents like me that come from other suburbs to use it regularly. It's one of my very happy places, and I use it frequently. Of course, we've got hundreds of thousands of workers that come into the CBD every day that are using our park system and the Royal Botanic Gardens and Domain Parklands as an important chunk of that. And then millions of visitors that come to Melbourne. And on our last, oh, not ours, but it was on the last Destination Melbourne exit survey they did for visitors, the number one thing that was mentioned for why they'd enjoyed their experience were our parks and gardens. And so for all of those layers of uses, those demands need to be balanced, both in terms of what's happening today, but again in terms of the growth that we're foreseeing across all of those groups of people and the demographics within those groups. So it's an incredibly big balancing act, and the thoughtfulness that's gone into this to date and the care that will occur in terms of the detail should this be passed tonight, and it's sounding pretty good at the moment, then I know that that will reflect the balancing act that has to go on whilst preserving what is an incredible ecology. We want to deliver on the dream, Tony. Deliver on the dream. And we've learnt so much from previous experiences. And to say that this is a dream that really pulls together so many elements of the ambitions of the council, you know, is absolutely accurate. So how we go about making sure as councillors there's proper resource allocation, transparency, accountability as we move forward with the detail, and then the delivery to live up to this master plan is going to be really important, and something I know will get a lot of attention from councillors and the City of Melbourne team, and ongoing attention from our residents and other stakeholders involved. So I wanted to make those comments. Congratulations again to everybody involved. It's been a, what did I say, hearts and lungs is the park. This has been a hearts and soul and every other part, I'm sure, an all-consuming project. So thank you very much. Well done, and I'm looking forward to supporting it.
Councillor Lilley.
I'll be very quick, and I also want to acknowledge the team and also Councillor Cathy Oak for their work. You know, having been to some of the discussions and everything, it's great to see the enthusiasm. And also I remember putting forward the barbecue and everything, and love the fact that it's been carried in. I also want to pay my respect to Governor Latrobe for actually having the vision and insight to actually do this kind of thing. And it just reminds us, again, our role, which is, you know, we are custodians of something really great, and it's something that we need to plan for the future. One thing for me is, and probably this is something I've really experienced the last couple of days, which is going to the MSO in the ball and also to the shrine this morning, was that not everyone can actually walk or bike to the park. And, you know, and I think we need to really look at how we can actually get people there. You know, one of the things we could actually really advocate for, I personally would like to see, and speaking with Dean this morning, with the CEO of the Shrine, is, you know, maybe free tram zone to the Shrine, because I think that's a really, really good option. But overall, I'm really excited, looking forward to it, seeing how we can actually achieve that.
Thanks, Councillor Luke. Divided views on free trams here, but anyway. Councillor Francis Gilley.
I'm not going to mention free trams, promise.
I did.
what an awful thing. No, I just want to say to the team, you know, I think in terms of, you know, the complexity of this city and the work that we do and the levels of partnerships that we have to work with, it's really, I think what you've delivered here and obviously Cathy Oak, Councillor Oak's support of that and actually her fingers in so many of those bits that come together here. But, you know, overarching papers on climate change, on greening, you know, on cultural diversity, then the history, then five other partners, then the engagement with all of those people to hold all of that tension and then to come with something that actually really brings thoughtful and grateful engagement is, I think, something that we should really look at you, reflect on, and really, you know, set the bar for ourselves to say, can we keep doing it like this? So I really want to acknowledge you for the way that you've gone about this kind of very gentle and thoughtful and deep approach to planning. Well done.
Any other speakers? If not, I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, I declare that carried unanimously. We all love parks. Very nicely done. And I'll continue in the role of the Chair of the meeting in relation to the Finance and Governance Portfolio. There's one report from management for consideration under the Finance and Governance Portfolio. That's Agenda Item 6.2, the 2018-19 second quarter year-to-date financial performance report. And I'll call on our CFO, Michael Tennis, to make a brief presentation.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors. It's very pleasing to put forward another very favourable report, financial report, for the second quarter. The first quarter delivered some really good momentum, and I think that's carried on over the course of the last 3 months. So it's not often when you see your revenues increasing and your costs decreasing, but we've got that dichotomy at the moment, which is pleasing to see. So as we lead into the second half of the year, there are a couple of movements that will start to shift possibly in the other direction, and part of that is in terms of some of the maintenance activities that we've got in train. At the half year, we're about $4 million favourable in maintenance costs. Out of the Capital Works program, we expect that some of that $4 million will be spent in the final 6 months, and that will claw back to what our original budget expectations were in that regard. In terms of some of the key areas of revenue that we were favourable in the first 6 months, marketing contributions have been positive. Operating grants, building service fees and parking fees have been up by $1 million as well, which is good to see. The cars coming into Melbourne and coming to our businesses and hopefully supporting retail and the all the work that gets done by the employees around Melbourne. In terms of expenses, as I mentioned, materials and services were underspent by around $4 million. And then that was slightly offset by the provision in doubtful debts, as we have increased that by $1 million as we are pursuing our Fines Victoria in terms of the delays that we're facing, as well as many other councils that are facing that same challenge. From a balance sheet perspective, from 30 June, two key movements. One is in trade receivables, as you would expect. Significant rates notices have been issued in that regard, so that looks like a large movement. It's $192 million. That's pretty consistent with what our expectations. And then, obviously, trade payables, where people have paid their rates in advance, and that's sitting at $118 million in movement, again, in line with expectations. And from cash balances, just to finish off, the $112 million at 31 December, that's $26 million decline from the 30 June position. And the majority of that is in regards to the capital that we've been spending. But there was also a periodic payment of $11 million for the fire service levy, which is one of those ongoing payments out of our rate collections. So looking forward to the second 6 months, as I mentioned, there will be some clawbacks through timing, but we are very well placed at this point in time.
Thanks, Michael. Any questions for Michael? Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Michael. Feel free to take the question on notice. It's not necessarily relevant for my vote tonight, but I always start at the back of the report with the supplementary valuations and move forward. They're now included, thanks to the work of a former Chair of Finance and Governance who may also be in the Chamber. New Value General SupVal regime is now in place, I understand. We budgeted $6.3 million across the year, and we're well ahead of more than half of that with $4.9 million. It sounds like we're going to surpass our conservative estimate. My question is, are we experiencing any teething problems with the transfer to the Valuer General for the assessment of our supplementary valuations?
Look, I'm not aware of any major teething issues that have come through in terms of the reporting there, but we're happy to follow it through for you, Councillor Leavitt.
Councillor Rees.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Thank you for the presentation, Michael. My inquiry goes to a small number, but nonetheless one that could pique the interest of Melburnians. It's around parking fines. So parking fines are down about 8.5%. The explanation in the notes goes to the request by infringement officers that they be paired up together because of safety concerns. What is the outlook on that situation, and what's the impact on the budget going forward?
Look, outlook there at this stage, we're still assessing, but we believe it's fairly minor in that regard, the actual financial impact. The impact on officers, obviously, is something we look into on a constant basis to ensure their safety. I think part of the key reason for it being down is there are, I think, a lot of smart meters out there, and people are becoming more familiar with them now. And I think as you've... I've actually been a recipient of a fine, and when you've received one for being overtime, you know fairly quickly that it's not one of those things that you can argue in court. And I think you're... So I think there's a bit of a learning going on there as well. So I think basically there's a number of other activities as to why some of those revenues are down. But I think we'll just keep monitoring it.
Thanks, Michael. Any further questions, Lord Mayor?
Just one, Michael, quickly, so that we've asked it. You mentioned it actually in your presentation in terms of Fines Victoria and frustration with their ability to actually do their job.
Yeah.
If you could comment just on where you see the State Government Act at in terms of fulfilling their obligations, which obviously have a revenue impact on us.
Yes, look. I think the feedback that we've had to date is that it is an ongoing issue that is being rectified. We're not seeing a significant improvement at this stage. I know a number of other councils have also been inquiring in regards to when their systems will be processing on a more frequent basis and obviously collecting the fines from the personnel that aren't paying. So, look, it is a process of continuous improvement and we're just working through that with the right authorities.
Thanks, Michael. We'll move to debate, and I'm happy to move the recommendation on screen that we accept the quarterly financial performance report, and I call for a seconder. Lord Mayor, always good to have a bit of focus on parking, and look, the parking story really continues. This is something which has been going on again for quite some time, in that we won't be able to rely on parking revenue into the future as we see densification of the city in our own policies, like the transport strategy. We look at sort of 300-odd car parks a year being lost through repurposing that as wider footpaths, as new open space, about 80 hectares of greater green over the last 20 years. It means some of our road space is actually being turned into great new parkland as we see bigger users in the city. So on the parking fine side,
unfavourable by 1.8 million. Often that's due to greater compliance, which is excellent, and also more ways to pay. So you're seeing a much easier way to pay. On the flip side of that, we've got parking fees up $1 million. So they often go close to cancelling each other out, but the overall story with parking revenue as we head to a much denser city is that it won't be the revenue stream that will be as large as it has been in the past, and that's why we needed to diversify our income. I too, like Councillor Leppett, like to go to the detail of these reports, and you find all sorts of interesting things. And our investment income across our portfolio is actually ahead of budget, returned $4.8 million year to date against the budget of $4.1 million. But in that, the property returns are on budget. Our car parks and subsidiaries are below budget, and we actually make it ahead of budget by our cash term deposits well above budget. So you can see we're in a pretty good, strong cash position at the moment. Again, we've got a strong cash position, but the next 2 to 5 years with the huge infrastructure spend that we've got ahead of us to consider over the 10-year financial plan means that we're going to have to be very vigilant in terms of our budgets going forward. But it's always pleasing when your CFO says that we're on budget, in fact ahead of budget, and it looks like that we'll be heading towards our budgeted underlying surplus as we round out the year. So all in all, a good set of numbers. Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Well done to you as Chair of the Portfolio. Michael, you have got across the detail very quickly of what is quite a complex and large organisation and budget. So well done. Always good to see us questioning how we can do better on revenue, which you're doing, and managing those expenses very tightly, you know, even if they're stable, and then keep moving them down where we can and as appropriate. So I think that's reflected in the numbers, and it certainly gives the impression that it's being well managed. So thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Any other speakers to this item? If not, I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour? I declare that carried unanimously, and I hand back to the Lord Mayor to chair the rest of the meeting.
Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Well, this concludes the reports from management this evening. There are three items of general business to be considered this evening. The first one is item 7.1, which is notice of motion, Councillor Watts, Association of Bayside Municipalities, renewal of membership. Would councillors like a presentation on this motion? No, thank you. Then I'm calling on Councillor Watts to make a brief presentation.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I think it's interesting to consider whether or not we should be members of this particular...
Sorry, we'll just get a seconder.
I'm going to say, Councillor Watts is moving the motion. Can we have a seconder, Councillor Lelou? Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry to jump right in. It's been on my mind because of the very long presentation with absolutely appropriate attention made to our parklands. But I think we pay very much less attention to the importance of Melbourne's position as a maritime city. We are a port city. We have a fairly small exposure to the bay, but we have a long heritage and a very important current relationship with waterways. What we also have in the City of Melbourne is a really excellent waterways branch. So I'm keen that we persist with our relationship with the Association of Bayside Municipalities. Even though we may have a small exposure, we have a very big interest in what goes on in one of our aquatic assets in the city, and that's our bay. So I hope we can bring expertise, and I hope we can turn our attention to the heritage of our bay and the sustaining the public asset that it is by remaining a member.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Councillor Lelou, as the seconder, would you like to speak to the motion?
Only briefly, Lord Mayor. And again, just wanted to commend on Councillor Jackie Watts for her passion on the maritime And I think looking back on it, and I know that it was a recommendation that we are not to be a member, but I strongly feel, given Councillor Watts' passion and also insight on this matter, I think the value is there, and it's something that I'm sure that both, it's not just us, but also the ABM also would take, I guess, sorry, my brain's just a little bit fried from all this, but they would take also our expertise and also from that, and having Councillor Watts as our representative being there, it would be such a tremendous, I guess, issue, tremendous passion going forward. Yeah, sorry, I'm just...
Thank you, Councillor. Other councillors to speak to the motion? Councillor Pinder? And then
I think there's no doubt about Councillor Watts' passion about the waterways. So well done bringing this to the fore. I think, you know, we are so much a part of the Bay, and this membership will augur quite nicely for us to have a, you know, have a part of that integration of the coastal waterways. So thank you, Councillor.
Councillor Wood?
I wholeheartedly agree. I thank Councillor Watts for ensuring that we're staying as part of this association. And in my time as Chair of the Environment Portfolio, there was two occasions when the recommendation was to also leave this association. And at that time, I pushed back, and the reason was, obviously, we are an important maritime city. But the other thing is the great work that the association has done around things like sea level rise modelling. So it does important work because, again, being a bayside city, these sorts of opportunities are fantastic, but also on the flip side of that, the threats that we face through things like sea level rise, tidal surge, storm surges, that is some of the great work that this association is doing also. So I wholeheartedly support remaining in this association, and fantastic that Councillor Watts will be our representative.
Excellent. Any other speakers to this motion this evening? Then I'm putting it to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. That is unanimous. I declare that motion carried. Thanks, councillors. Item 7.2 is the post-travel report by Councillor Cathy Oak, 6th Global Biodiversity Summit of Local and Subnational Governments, Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, November 2018. I'm actually going to move this motion. I'm looking for a seconder, Councillor Leppert, thank you. I know that we have read the travel report. We know from feedback from Councillor Oak that there was enormous benefit back to us in terms of discussions had there, relationships built and knowledge gained, and also that we add a lot of leadership into that forum that's really important in terms of our participation in these issues, and for those reasons I'm happy to commend this motion to you. Councillor Leppert, would you like to speak to the motion?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Just briefly, of course Cathy's not here tonight, but the report explains what she has been doing. She was there in the capacity as the first Vice Chair of ICLEI globally. She sought Council's support to be recognised as a City of Melbourne representative as well, and we granted that because, of course, we did. She did a remarkable job chairing and facilitating a lot of the different parts of the Biodiversity Summit on an issue that is incredibly close to her heart. The Herald Sun's gone, but I just wanted to point out on the public record, even though it's in the report, there was, of course, no cost to Council.
Thank you, Councillor Leppert. A very useful point. Thank you. A lot of value, though. Any other speakers to this motion? No. Then I'm going to put it to the vote. All those in favour? Thank you. That's unanimous, so I declare that motion carried. We move to item 7.3, post-travel report by Councillor Jackie Watts, Yangon, Myanmar, November 2018. Did I say that bit wrong? You can correct me. It's part of why you do these things, so that we can all be educated and increase our knowledge. So would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No? Then I'm going to call on Christopher Lamb. Thank you for your patience, Christopher, this evening. It's delightful to have you. Please come.
I've enjoyed it.
Good, thank you. Please come. Thank you. Yes, noted. We haven't started the clock yet. Please come and we welcome your submission this evening.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor and Deputy Lord Mayor and other councillors. It's a great pleasure to be here again. I haven't seen you in this configuration because of the elections that took place, etc., and because of the arrival of a new CEO, and I'm glad to be able to see you. I'm not going to take up time, not that I can, but I wanted to say that what Jackie Watts has done in this private visit is of great benefit to Australia as a whole. We in the Australian Myanmar Institute value what she's done, not only because it's thorough and because of the range of people that you've seen from the report that she's been in contact with, but she's also been able to illustrate to the federal government and in part to the state government, if they're watching, the value that there is from local government directly relating itself to local government in a city like Yangon. But the same is true of cities anywhere else in the world. It's just that I'm from the Australia Myanmar Institute, so it's those cities that interest me. One of the things that comes out of the discussions that there have been tonight, and I'll refer to one of them because it shows the direct relationship, the Domain Parkland story that you've been through, and it's a very impressive report. Yangon is grappling with how to define and protect its own parkland. Jackie Watts' report shows that the city of Melbourne, and I think the way this is referred to here, the Yangon Heritage Trust Urban Strategy refers to Melbourne as a model. There's a very extensive report done by them on their heritage that looks at Melbourne as what it once was, the most livable city in the world. Yangon's aspiration is to be Asia's most livable city, and they see Melbourne as the model for that. This has caught the imagination of a lot of different people, not just in Myanmar. Universities across Australia have seen that. Businesses across Australia have seen it. People involved in infrastructure, people doing urban planning, roads, highways, rail, trams, all that stuff, they look here for their inspiration. The business that's available to Australia from the work that they're doing and that Jackie Watts has identified says to me that it's very important if the council could do as Jackie has suggested here, note her report, and then when that's done, if it's possible, I'd like to come and see you, CEO, and talk about what we might do directly with your own bureaucracy to give this life and make it work for the benefit of all of us and for the councillors. I know you all love Myanmar. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Christopher. Well, I'm going to call on a councillor to move the motion. Councillor Rees, call on a councillor to second the motion. Councillor Leleu, thank you. Would you like to speak to the motion, Councillor Rees?
Look, I don't know that I can add much to the eloquent address that we received from Christopher Lamb, except to say that Councillor Watts' commitment to Myanmar is very well noted and appreciated by councillors. Also, picking up on a theme identified by Councillor Lippitt, this trip, of course, came at no cost to the council. And finally, congratulate Councillor Watts again for her recent award of OAM, for contribution to the city, and through this endeavour that she undertakes as well.
Thank you, Councillor Rees. Councillor Leleu?
Same as well. I think it's great that Councillor Watts' passion especially around Myanmar. We share an office and the amount of times we've talked many times about it is great. I'm very passionate about international engagement and I think this is great to see. You know, Melbourne will be the largest city in Australia in a few years' time, and I think our role in the international aspect is quite important. So I again commend Councillor Watts for her passion and look forward to see how we can actually continue on that.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor, are there any other speakers to the motion this evening? Councillor Pinder.
I think the big thing here is, you know, Councillor Watts does so much work in her own time, and that's to be commended. And coupled with the waterways, Myanmar being another passion, I salute you. Thank you.
Good. Well, councillors, if there are no other speakers to the motion, I'm going to put it to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. And that's unanimous. So I'm declaring that motion carried. Well done. Well, this concludes the items of general business for consideration this evening. Councillors, are there any items of proposed urgent business that you'd like to raise at this point? No. Thank you. All right, we come to that part of our meeting, which is public questions. As with the start of our meeting, we allow 15 minutes at the end of each meeting for members of the public to ask questions. I just remind you that questions should be no greater than 90 seconds. It's about asking a question, not making a submission. I now invite members of the public, if you could just raise your hand so we could see how many people there might be. One, two. So, Tony, why don't you kick us off with a question, and Stephen, we can then come to you. I think that's it. Good. Tony.
The residents of Southbank have got some questions in regard to their recycling, two questions in particular. We have seen just recently the recycling depots that are no longer able to take recycling. I am not sure whether that's impacting on this council. I don't think it is. I think ours is with a different depot. But the question remains, we know that the recycling is not being recycled. The first question is our recycling that is being collected, is it being recycled or is it still being stored? If that is the case, and it's not going to landfill unbeknown to us, if that is the case, how long can this last for before it can't sustain itself anymore? At some stage, there has to be a solution. What is plan B or C?
Really good question, Tony, one that's been occupying our minds today as well. And I'm going to ask the Deputy Lord Mayor to respond to your queries.
Thanks, Tony. And I know you've got a real interest in this, as have a lot of residents, and as have I for a very long time as well. And I'm sad to say that the SKM situation has affected City of Melbourne. So their Laverton site has been served a notice by the EPA for unsafe stockpiles. And we have been, over the last sort of 24 hours since we were informed, it's been a very difficult time for a lot of councils because some of us were informed a couple of hours before SKM essentially stopped taking our recycling. And unfortunately, none of those other options have come to fruition. So being absolutely upfront with you and with our residents that at the moment our curbside recycling is going to landfill. It's unsatisfactory. It's unpalatable. It's galling that we're in this situation after having the China crisis, after having a statewide resource recovery infrastructure plan endorsed, well supported by councils, that we're in this situation, but that's exactly where we are. So it's sort of a daily update, if you like, in terms of the EPA working with SKM and hopefully resolving the issue that those facilities can be open again and accepting our recycling. But again, we can't speed that process up or get involved in that process. It's a process between the EPA and SKM. We understand that the China ban has created some issues for recyclers like SKM because their feedstock now has to be so much more pure. That means through the technical process that it takes them much longer. So it's not that they aren't selling product, it's just that it's taking a very long time to go through the process. So some councils are stockpiling, some are sending to landfill, but all councils are saying this is unacceptable. We also don't think we're going to get anywhere with a blame game because we can sort of talk about what hasn't been done over history, but really what we need to be talking about now is what is the really short-term solution to get that curbside recycling back to being recycled. And one thing that I'd really encourage all residents is please continue to recycle. It seems sort of a bit of an anathema to be putting recycling and it going to landfill, but we don't want to reduce that rate of commitment that we have because, you know, rest assured that we're working as quickly as we can with other councils to resolve the issue. SKM receives about 50% of the recycling, curbside recycling in Victoria. They've said they're optimistic in opening within the next 7 days.
we're unsure how that optimism is placed, but again, that's really for them to work through with EPA. What we need to look at is a range of things which we've talked about at great length, but we need to stop the waste getting into the stream in the first place is the ultimate goal. So things like national stewardship recycling schemes that are there for our televisions, that are coming in through the e-waste ban, things like paint back where you can return leftover paint. These are the sort of schemes which are funded by industry which see the full life cycle. We need to get more end markets domestically. We need, again, things like the national packaging targets that have been put out. But unfortunately, the national waste policy that was agreed at a national level has no targets and no timeline. So that's not really a roadmap for us to address this issue. I guess the last point that I'll make, and I said it's not about a blame game, but the facts are that we have a landfill levy that all councils are paying, so it's our money. That is in the order of $500 million plus, and we look forward to working with the state government on getting some of those funds into the market so that we can attract some of the bigger guys, you know, the Veolias of the world, to come into our market, and that may take some seed funding, whether that's development of facilities, further development of markets. So I wish I had better news for you. Myself personally, and I know my fellow councillors and our officers, are actually pretty shattered that this is the outcome. But this is a really complex industry, but now is really the time we've got to draw a line in the sand. And I think when we're sending our residents curbside recycling to landfill, that this is a damn good time to say enough's enough.
So can I just clarify that it's only been very recent in the last few days or something that the recycling hasn't been going to landfill and therefore going forward? It hasn't been like that for the last month or two?
So I'll take the notice. I'll take the question on notice in terms of the exact timing. But my understanding is that this is literally within the last week that this has occurred. But I can come back to you on exact timing. I can also confirm that many councils were given literally hours' notice before the EPA notice was served. So, do you want to update on that at all?
Through you, Lord Mayor, I think that's correct. I think it's only in the last few days. But let's actually take it on notice so we can be 100% accurate.
I suppose the next point is this council going to do more to lobby the federal government about what they can do for initiatives to get recycling ideas out there and support industry or what have you?
So our waste and resource recovery strategy is fantastic, but we are a small part of a much bigger machine. We need to increase the aggregation of materials. We're absolutely working with the state government on things like integrated waste and recycling hubs with potential waste to energy as part of that equation as well. Ballarat Council is working on a waste to energy. So there's lots happening, but to be in this position right now is not a great outcome. So your interest and your questions are absolutely valid, and we're just going to be upfront and honest with you that at this time our curbside recycling is not going where it should.
Tony, thank you. Stephen, welcome.
There we go. Just hoping to get a couple of facts on the table on the Doyle matter. The first one is approximately how much were the council's costs in the injunction process?
I'm going to ask our CEO to respond.
Lord Mayor, I don't have that information at hand. I don't have that information at hand, but our costs were certainly met by our insurer.
And have council or council's insurers contributed to the legals or medical costs of the former Lord Mayor through this process?
To go from the time that the injunction order was put in place, there's been no cost. Mr. Robert Doyle's met all of his own costs. He's not covered by the City of Melbourne or its insurer.
So that's for the last 14 months, the injunction, but leaving the injunction to one side. Previously, have council or council's insurers contributed to the former Lord Mayor's medical or legal costs?
Look, I'll take it on notice, but all councillors and all officers would be given coverage in terms of their legal costs whilst they are councillors, whilst they are officer, and same as senior officers. At the point in time, the point I'm making is at the point in time that the injunction order was made by Mr. Robert Doyle, all costs associated with that proceeding are his costs. They're not covered by council. So.
Okay, now, March 13 last year, council said this. The investigation report has been drafted and was provided as a draft to Mr. Doyle's lawyers for his review earlier last week, consistent with the ongoing engagement with Mr. Doyle. Is it the council's intention to also follow that process with Volume 2 of the Freckledon Report?
Can you repeat this, the question?
So the former Lord Mayor was shown a draft of Volume 1 of the Freckledon Report. The victim still haven't seen it, the public still hasn't seen it, the council still haven't seen it, very few people have seen it. Is it council's intention to follow that process again with Volume 2, where the Lord Mayor and his legal team will be shown the full report and Carla and others won't be shown the report?
Can we just say Robert Doyle? Because you're saying Lord Mayor there and I don't think that's accurate.
All right.
Now, look, I'll need to take that question on notice. My understanding is, and again I'll take it on notice, is that Robert Doyle was not Lord Mayor at the time the report was concluded. The second question to your answer in terms of can the report be provided to Carla Williams? And the answer is it depends. It depends on what is gathered within that report in terms of any confidential statements that have been made. That will be advice given to councillors at the time on the release of the full report or the release of the findings. There is nothing stopping council at this point from releasing the full report and all of the findings, but it will be a decision made at a later point in time once the investigation is concluded and the report finalised.
And just to clarify one of your earlier comments, does the deed of settlement allow council to release the full report publicly and provide it to the police expeditiously, imminently?
Two parts to that question. The first part, does it allow it to be released? Does the deed allow it to? Yes, it does. So when I made the comments earlier, that there's nothing of significance being withheld, and most importantly, the City of Melbourne's not prevented by the settlement from disclosing Dr. Freckledon's report or findings after his investigation is completed and after the police investigation and any resulting proceedings is concluded.
That's the point. After the police... Yeah, so have you agreed not to release the report until the police investigation has been completed, which could be a year?
So we have legal advice in terms of the council have legal advice in relation to the releasing of that report whilst police are investigating. So the advice we have is whilst the police are investigating the conduct of a person, it would be unfair for the findings to be published.
Okay, but there's nothing in the deed of settlement that constrains you from releasing the report publicly if you choose to, before the police inquiry is completed. Okay.
No, that's incorrect. There is an agreement that we will release the findings once the police investigation is complete.
Okay. All right.
Stephen, how many questions have you got?
A couple more.
Okay.
We'll be within the 15 minutes, I promise. I know it's the first time ever we've gone over 15 minutes, I think. Second time. Okay. All right. I've been away for a couple of years. I must have missed it. Have the new Lord Mayor and the new CEO taken the time to read the 100-page Volume 1 Freckledon report as yet to be fully informed on the situation?
Well, maybe, Lord Mayor, can I take that question first? Is that okay? Look, I've not read the report. I've not yet read the report, and I've been here for 4 weeks. And in terms of the focus of that attention, it's been on the new investigation It's been on the new investigation, or the current investigation, and the current legal action and the Supreme Court. I would be stating in terms of the advice to councillors, and I'll just get a comment I had earlier. The comment I made earlier when Carla Williams was present was that the report, the first report, was obtained with a range of assurances of confidentiality. Therefore, my advice to councillors would be that it's not appropriate for councillors or for the Lord Mayor to read that first report. That would be the advice I'll give them. If the second report contains comments that were retained under the assurance of confidentiality, then that advice is most likely to be forthcoming from me in relation to the second report.
Stephen, as you know from public reports in relation to the first part of the investigation, that full report was always to be treated confidentially, and access to that report is very limited, and none of the councillors have read that report, and that is part of our respect for the people that participated in the process and their desire for confidentiality.
Okay. I just think it partly goes to informed approval of various matters going forward, such as the terms of the deed of settlement. Can I ask, can you give me any information on who authorised the deed of settlement and the terms of it at council? Did it go to council, a confidential session, or who authorised it?
Certainly. So, look, there's a Section 86 committee that has met. There was some advice given to them, some legal advice given to them, and they provided me with the authorisation through our solicitors to, subject to a range of things being met, which I commented on earlier in terms of those in the... subject to those being met, that we would look towards reaching a deed of settlement. Okay.
Final question. It looks like you can publicly release the findings of Volume 2 imminently, and the record on Volume 2 will be delivered to Council within 2 or 3 days. Will it be possible to achieve a public result for Carla before the March 5 FMC meeting, so we don't have to go through any more public questions on these issues, and we can achieve closure for everyone within council, including Carla, to get on with their lives and to get on with their jobs?
So again, through you, Lord Mayor, the process is that we have given instructions to Dr. Freckleton to conclude his investigation. You commented there that he could do that in 2 or 3 days. We don't know that. What we do know is that there are some people that need to be interviewed, and as soon as it can be practically finished and he can arrive at a conclusion, then we will receive his report. The advice, and again, the advice, whether or not we... And I think this is a pertinent point. If we went to the Supreme Court and we were successful, and there was, and park aside appeals and timeframes, the question of legal advice to council about the releasing of those findings and the timing of the releasing of those findings, subject to the matter currently being before the police, is a matter that council would need to continue to consider. Mm-hmm. So the answer to your question is the report can be concluded whilst the matter is before the police. The advice to council from our lawyers will be there is some risk.
And final question: I'm guessing the deed of settlement also provides for the full report to be provided expeditiously to Mr. Doyle and his legal team.
No, that's not correct.
Silent on that, or
silent on that.
Silent on that. So you could choose, or you could choose. It's council's discretion.
It's council's choice
as to whether. Correct.
And it'll be subject to the same confidentiality issues that we had in the first investigation, Stephen. And until it's concluded, we really can't make any decisions on those sorts of matters. But we're absolutely committed to getting an outcome to this investigation. And
these decisions are within the powers of the Section 283 Committee?
86 Committee.
Section 86 yep. Committee?
Yep.
Yeah, of three councillors?
Yep.
Okay, all right. Look, I appreciate your indulgence of being able to ask more than the permitted two questions. It's important to get a few facts on the record.
I didn't know there was a limit to number of questions. I know for next time.
The rules are a little bit ambiguous on that, but I appreciate that you've indulged an opportunity to ask those questions and the frankness in which you've replied to them, particularly the CEO, so thank you.
Thanks, Stephen. All right. Well, you know, those public question times are my favourite times of the meetings, and they've been very well utilised tonight with all good intent and with a really honest exchange of information on a number of issues. So thank you to everybody who's been involved in our meeting this evening, to members of the public, to management, to staff and to councillors. Thank you very much. I am declaring the meeting closed at 7:45 p.m. Thank you.